Hi, James here from Adventure Bike Rider, and welcome to this episode of the ABR Garage. Now, I'm joined in the garage today by Bryn and Ollie from the ABR teams, and we're going to be talking about motorcycle touring. But in particular, is paying to go on an organised tour actually better than riding solo? But before we get into all that, I just wanted to say thank you for watching, and if you like what you see, please do like and subscribe the video. By hitting those icons, you really are helping us continue to make more content for YouTube. So, without further ado, let's get into motorcycle touring. So, motorcycle touring. Guys, it's something that's pretty close to all our hearts. It's something we enjoy doing. I was lucky enough to do it very recently, but I won't talk about myself. So, before we dive into the topic, Bryn, 10 seconds. What have you been up to since the last episode of the ABR Garage 2 weeks ago?
10 seconds. I did a 1,000 miles in 24 hours.
Did you do an iron bar?
I did an iron bar.
I didn't know. No one. Well, you didn't tell me.
I haven't had it verified yet. But yeah, I rode 1,000 miles, 24 hours from Stratford-upon-Avon up to Fort William to Inverness and back to Stratford-upon-Avon.
In the depths of a UK winter.
In the middle of winter. -4 a lot of the way. Yeah, it's fun.
Sounds like motorcycle touring at its worst, but perhaps we can get onto that later. Myself, yeah, I've been, in the last 2 weeks, really lucky to go abroad for the first time in a while. Went touring in the Canary Islands. I went to the launch of BMW's new K1600 touring bike.
That's 10 seconds.
That's 10 seconds. Ollie, what have you been up to lately?
It's quite short. I had COVID and got dumped, so yeah, that was fun.
Wow. Well, awkward.
Not a lot
awkward
of riding.
Had the best one.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely. Moving on. No, cool. Okay, so motorcycle touring. Yep. Yeah, we all enjoy doing it. I do notice that whenever we write about it, particularly on ABR's website, it does throw up a lot of very strong opinions. People seem to have very clear views about what motorcycle touring should be and shouldn't be. So, I guess, Bryn, to begin with, it comes in many different forms, but, you know, kind of what decision do you have to make at the very start?
Well, I guess what the reason we're talking about today is, should you go on a guided tour, should you pay a tour company to take you on one of these great rides, or should you put in the effort, research time yourself and go and do it yourself? Those seem to be the two main options, obviously. And yeah, when you're right, when we post about doing a guided tour on social media, on Facebook, yeah, there's always someone who will come in, it's not a proper trip or a proper adventure if you're doing it with a tour guide.
Yeah, that's the classic, isn't it? It's not a proper adventure, yeah. As if there's a dictionary definition of what a proper adventure is.
Well, is it? What do you reckon? Is paying to go on an organised tour a proper adventure? Or perhaps, to begin with, we should explain what exactly goes on an organised tour if you've never done one.
Yeah, well, I've never done one.
So that was a really bad question to ask you, wasn't it?
Ollie's one of the ones
right,
commenting.
I would say that
you're the one giving me hate on Facebook, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, what goes on an organised tour? It's very, essentially...
Have you done one?
Yes, thank God.
All right.
I've been lucky... No, none. No, I've been lucky to do maybe 6 organised tours all around the world. So I've got experience of doing organised tours, but also doing my own trips and rides when doing it for magazines and stuff like that.
So what goes on? What can you expect to happen when you book it?
So when you book a tour, it's more what do you expect from a guided tour? Is you're obviously paying a tour company to provide your bike for you, and then to completely plan out the ride for you from start to finish, even to where you stop to have lunch on day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5. Where you're staying, where your hotels are, how your luggage sometimes gets from one hotel to another. You know, it's basically you go on holiday and someone else looks after you and shows you the great roads, shows you the secrets of the area, where the locals know and etc. Whereas obviously self-guided, well, you don't have any of that. You've got to put in all the effort and research yourself. You know, we'll probably go into this in a few moments, but my...
Talk about it now. Why not? Yeah. That's why you're here.
Well, there's benefits of both. And it's the same, you know, we did an episode on, can any bike be an adventure bike? Yep. And can a guided tour be an adventure? Absolutely. Why not? End show.
So as someone that hasn't done one, Ollie, you've done a fair bit of touring by yourself, actually, solo, because you don't have any friends, which is fair enough. It's all right. But I know you've gone up to Nordkap, you've done some Spain, Portugal, Eastern Europe. You know, what Bryn just said sound like to you as a kind of confirmed solo do-it-yourself tourer?
So I think it's quite an interesting one because I definitely think the people with experience of doing that sort of things are the ones that will go, well, that's not an adventure straight away. But I'm actually more on the fence. Like, it's not my cup of tea, I have to be honest. I really, and yeah, we'll go into it in a second, but I really enjoy the freedom of being able to make your own plan. But what you said sounds easy. And I think that that's one of the like major things that gets people into it, because actually going abroad by bike, finding yourself in the middle of nowhere where you don't know the language, where you don't know where you're riding through, that can be quite daunting. And I definitely think that for some people, if that's going to be a barrier to traveling by bike, then a guided tour is taking down that barrier, which means it's a good thing. Yeah. And ultimately, it's all we always have. We come back to this time and time again. There's no definition of adventure. Well, it's relative. So if going to flying out somewhere and someone showing you the best roads is your idea of an adventure and it makes you feel brilliant, then absolutely that's an adventure. Mm. And if it doesn't, then why are you speaking down on someone else's dream and someone else's fun? So that's my very measured response.
Yeah. I'd say guided tours, they provide a bit of a safety net.
Yeah.
And also convenience. I mean, you've just come back from touring Gran Canaria, haven't you?
And Tenerife. Gomera, which I've never heard of before.
Exactly. You'd never heard of the place.
And so I found somewhere new.
Yeah, so if you hadn't have been on... Well, first of all, if you hadn't have been on a guided tour, you probably wouldn't have gone and rode Gran Canaria. Well, you did before, didn't you?
I wouldn't have known about Gomera.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I wouldn't have discovered it.
It's also a lot harder to get your bike over to somewhere like that if you want to ride your own bike. So you're probably going to have to concede to the fact that you're going to be riding a hired bike. Yeah.
Do you know what? That's one of my favourite parts of the experience.
Mm.
Because I went with Eidevice Bike Travel, which is an Austrian company. I think. Yeah. I went with Eidevice on there. They call it an Atlantic Extreme Tour, and it's 5 days of lots and lots of riding three Canary Islands. And it was amazing, but I have to admit, one of my favourite parts was when I got an email through saying, hey, James, what bike would you like to ride?
Yeah.
And it was just like a kid at Christmas, to use a cliche. I just had all the best adventure bikes you could possibly think of in front of me on this screen. And which one do I want? And I had a first and a second choice.
Yeah.
And it was just, I spent about half an hour just looking at it and thinking, what do I want? And that was a really nice experience.
And in contrast to, I think, the last time you went there when you and your friend Pierre ended up with a very, very slim pickings and ended up in two old single-cylinder F650 GSs, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, I'm a little bit like you. I do love solo travel. I love making up as you go along. And it sounds romantic. It sounds fantastic. But that was a downside of my first ever trip to the Gran Canaria. Yeah, that we rocked up. It was winter here, so we thought, well, we'll just hire some bikes. Yeah. It'll be easy and disappear off. Like, little did we know that winter is high season for British tourists over in the Canary Islands. All the bikes had been booked out, and we were schlepping around town. We were really tight, so we didn't pay for luggage on the flight. So we were wearing all our motorbike gear from home on the plane and then on the transfer to Mespalamas, which is a big tourist town. And we went to about four or five different places in the baking sun, walking around, not being able to get bikes, until someone made a phone call for us and we went to this back street little place, opened up, and there were a bunch of, quite frankly, knackered bikes. But we were so desperate for these bikes. And the guy kind of just seemed to like us. I just thought we were probably losers trying to help, sweating.
Bike
was going pink with every minute in the sun. And yeah, we got a couple of knackered old bikes with balding tyres and rusty chains and had the week of our lives. But it was very different. It was a very different experience. But I have to admit, the first time I ever did a bike tour was when Ubrin invited me to go on a route in Thailand. I'd been working at ABR for 3 weeks?
Not even a month.
I think it was Christmas, wasn't it? And I started in December.
That's it.
And I got a text from this fella, former editor of Adventure Bike Rider magazine, who said, do you fancy going to Thailand for 10 days on a bike tour?
Yeah.
Quite an easy question to answer.
Yeah, that was the worst text I've ever sent.
Well, because I was with my wife and, you know, I've been sold the job as, James, it's mostly office-based. You know, you do get to ride, but you do a lot of office work. Yeah. And then 3 weeks in, I was off to Thailand. But I do remember... And I'm a bit embarrassed about this, looking down on organised tours at that point. I'd never done one. And I'd always done solo travel. And I thought, oh, this is just easy. This isn't a proper adventure. I went there, had the absolute time of my life, explored Northern Thailand, met some amazing people, had a proper adventure.
Yeah.
And came back changing my mind. Mm. But a little bit like you, though, I do prefer to do it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of positives to guided tours. The main ones I see are being that you just get everything planned for you, and that gives you more time to enjoy riding. And where you're riding, you know your tour guide is going to pick out the best roads, the best things to see, the most interesting things to see. Like I went to Colorado with 106 West, a guy called John Hacks. And honestly, some of the roads we were riding in Colorado were just, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. I would never have found them by myself, but yeah. he knows this area like the back of his hand, and he will take you out and ride. It was a 8-day trip, I think, around Colorado, taking in all these, I don't want to say undiscovered, because they're obviously undiscovered. There's people live down there, but there were like roads that you wouldn't think to go down. And it was just incredible.
I was just about to say, actually, I mean, I just said that I hadn't done an organised tour, but I went out to the Tenerife Experience down in southern Spain, and that was a day ride. Yeah. And actually, you're bang on the money there, because I was on the Tenerife, and if I was touring around southern Spain, which I have done, I would not have ridden the trails. And and we were led by Ed from Red Tread Adventures, and he was leading us on all of these amazing trails in the shadow of the Sierra Nevada mountain range, I think it is down there. And it was absolutely stunning. And I never in a million years would do that on a solo tour. Not least of all because I'm on my own or with a mate touring, and I'm kind of a bit nervous about striking off. What's the legality? Yeah. What happens if I have a fall on this trail, which happened to me in Latvia? Yeah. And I can tell you, crashing on your own and breaking your ankle when you're on your own without the safety net of a tour guide, I mean, that's not fun. Yeah. So I think that all of that stuff does contribute to, coming back to it again, if it gets people to go and travel by bike, even if it's a first, second, third time, or if that's the only way they ever do it, like, all power to them, really. Yeah.
So pros there. So we'll try and focus this conversation a little while we go off. But so pros of going on organised tour, and we're not selling this to you, by the way. Like we're not selling tours here. But hopefully, if you haven't gone touring before and you're looking to do it, inform a decision. Hopefully, but pros, you get to pick a bike,
ride new bikes.
You get your route planned out for you by a local expert who knows it, and you'd have a basically go and see things that you perhaps might not stumble across yourself. I don't know about you guys, but that helps because I have a really busy life. Believe it or not.
Exactly, convenience.
Sitting around here talking to these guys takes a lot of work. But no, we are busy. You know, we work, we work about hours. We've got stuff. You know, you've got kids. We've got busy lives. Having someone do that planning is helpful.
Yeah.
On the flip side, planning is fun as well on a bike trip. But, you know, if you're busy, you work hard, whatever, that's good. And I guess kind of another pro for me is the people you're with.
Absolutely. Yeah. On the flip side, though, they can be a big bloody negative.
Oh, you have bad experiences.
No, not too many. No. But that was the point I was going to make, is the people you... When you do a guided tour, you do put the fate of your trip and the enjoyment of your trip into a bit of a...
Lucky draw
of who you're going to be riding with. Because the people you ride with, I think, make or break a trip.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Actually, yeah, let's go that
100%.
Trip. Make or break a trip.
Yeah, 100%.
And... the thing of a guided tour is there's no getting away from them.
Yeah.
You go to the same hotels, you wake up at the same time, you have breakfast together, you ride together in the day, you have lunch together, you have dinner together, you probably don't sleep together, but you sleep in the same place.
What tours have you been on? It's that swingers tour you go on every year.
That'd be a good one, swingers tours. Maybe we should try this.
There's a niche market there. Bored couples.
Adventure bike swingers.
You get to swap pillions.
Throw your bike keys in at the end of the day. But anyway, if you do that, more power to you. But you do everything with these guys. And if you don't like... or if you don't get on with a couple of them or all of them, or if it's a big group of friends who have booked the tour for their group and you're just tagging on, you can feel a bit alienated, a bit left alone. And there's no getting off it unless you want to waste your money that you've just paid to go on the tour.
And I totally agree with that, because the last couple of weeks in the Canary Islands, I think it was four German guys, an Italian and two Swiss guys. And beforehand, I was thinking, they don't speak English. I speak no Italian or German. It could be a really isolating experience. Yeah. In reality, they were a really good bunch of fellas. Mm. And spoke English majority of the time, because the ignorant Englishman didn't. and I grew to like really, really like them and had a fantastic time with them. Yeah. But being mostly German, my God, they were efficient when it comes to time and where to be at a certain time. Yeah. And the first day I turned up a bit late because my flight was later, and they were all wonderfully, kindly waiting for me at dinner in this fancy hotel, and I felt so guilty. And really, I just wanted to go upstairs, have a shower and sort myself out, but I got ushered to dinner, and there were these seven or eight strangers just waiting for me before they tuck in.
Beaming like, smiles.
Oh, I feel really awkward. But, you know, so they were great. They made the journey. I really enjoyed it. Mm. On the flip side, I did have to get up 7:30 every day, breakfast at 8, be at the bikes by 8:30 or 9. And I found that rigorous adherence to a time schedule was pretty knackering on a holiday.
Would you say, though, that's not down to the fact that they were German, but more down to the fact that you were a guided tour, and that is the fact, that's the nature of the beast, is guided and regimented, and you're doing...
I think so. Yeah. I was having a chat with some of the guys that have done a few tours. I think Edelweiss has this kind of quite a strong following that people will book again and again and again, and why not? They do great stuff. And one of them said, if you've got an Italian guide, the times are a little bit more relaxed. Whereas if you've got a German or an Austrian guide, it's very on the mark, you know. And our guide was a fantastic fella, Pete. He was great. But I did find that regimented routine, while it's the only way to do it, really, if you've got a group of people.
Absolutely.
I did find that a couple of days I was like, I just wish I could have a lay-in. Yeah. Or I wish I could finish a bit early or something like that. But we're talking about people make it. I know you, when you were up in Norway or that sort of area, you were travelling solo. I remember you saying once that you actually felt a little bit lonely.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I was kind of thinking that it can be an isolator, but there's nothing more isolating than travelling by bike alone. And there are the plus sides and the negatives of that. The plus side is you are the one, you are marching to the beat of your own drum. You set your own agenda. If you fancy a couple of beers in the evening and have a few more than you planned for, the next morning you can have a lie-in and no one's there going, what time do you call this?
Yeah.
On the negative side, you tend to be having those beers alone, unless you do, which is why I'm so good at chatting to people, because I would just be in the middle of nowhere going up to people going, how's it going? Nice to meet you. Yep. Just
is this how you ended up in someone's hot tub?
Yeah. We were talking about the hot tub story.
When we say someone, we mean... How old were you when you were traveling?
Yeah, again.
We're going back to swinging again.
Yeah, how old were you?
23.
23, fresh-faced, riding through Norway.
Yeah, I mean, that's enough.
Didn't think it was weird that man gave you a massage in front
garage,
of his
late
wife.
Nights, isn't it?
I think you've got to kind of explain a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, I stayed at a lovely couple's house for the viewers.
There was a pineapple out the front.
They were much older than you, though, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I guess middle age, and they were just really accommodating, very kind, giving me lots of beers, pizza, and stuff. It was a really nice evening, and then we were in the hot tub later on, and a proposition was made, which I politely declined. But and that is definitely one of the upsides of traveling on your own. No, that's like stuff like that is, you know, it's really cool that you get to meet people in these places, but also, you know, for every. And there were obviously good stories as well. That was quite a funny story. But there were times that I met some really, really nice people and stayed on sofas. I met bike clubs out in Norway. But there were also times where I was wild camping in the middle of nowhere and just sat in a tent when it was raining outside, wondering what I was doing. And like, that's the thing, is that if you have a week, because I was very lucky, I quit my job to go travelling by bike, so I had an unlimited amount of time. But if you have a week or 2 weeks to go on a biking adventure, you kind of don't want to waste any of that time. And I think that a tour company makes sure that you don't waste a single day. And I think we've spoken about this when we were preparing for this podcast, that I went through Norway.
You can tell we prepared.
I went through Norway and stumbled across some really good roads, but I also missed out on like the Trollstigen and the Atlantic
Coast
Road. I didn't do any research. And I think we were going to talk about planning and how you plan a tour in a sec. But I didn't do any research, and that's definitely a downside of my preparation for it. Yeah. But if I was on a guided tour through Norway, there's not a I wouldn't have missed that road. And the tour guide would have made sure that I didn't. And that's definitely another downside, is that I look back on that trip with really fond memories. Like, I had some incredible random encounters, and I don't think you can put a price on that. But at the same time, I did also miss out on some cool things because I was doing it on my own. So, yeah, I mean, again, it's just two sides of a coin, and whichever side you fall on really depends on...
I think there's no right answer, is there?
Really? No, there isn't. But I think I like the fact that I just think it's important to say that there's absolutely space for having an adventure if you're paying someone to help you do it. Like, it does. It's one of those things that frustrates me a little bit when I see people commenting saying, like, well, that's not an adventure. Why would you do that? Because, you know, I firmly disagree with it.
It's really all relative. You know, if you're climbing Everest and you're paying one of the local people to help lug your gear up, you know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime adventure. But I guess if you're a mountaineer at... I don't know much about mountaineering, but goes up there and does it without oxygen all on their own, then someone paying someone to help them up there, they might say, well, that's not adventurous enough. Like, is it a similar thing there?
No, there is definitely
yeah, there is that side.
There is definitely that side of things in it's kind of elitism, isn't it, that extends across all walks of life where people have choices to do different things.
Yeah.
One thing I would say about, so we've spoken about a lot about the pros of an organised tour, and they are, I thoroughly enjoy them and they're great. I always think they feel like a holiday.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, which is a bit different to, like when I solo tour, I always feel like I've achieved something. And, you know, even though it might not be a big achievement, but I found my way. I've found places to eat and stay. I've not run out of fuel up a mountainside or something like that. And it always feels like an achievement when I've got back home. Whereas we think on an organised tour, I have a thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable time, but I don't feel any kind of satisfaction that I've grown as a person, or I don't want to get, you know, too touchy-feely here, but I don't feel like I've achieved. I think for me that's an important part of any type of travel.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of in the Canaries, I was talking into the GoPro because I made a video, which you'll also see on the ABR YouTube channel, about my time in the Canary Islands. And I was trying to tell the camera where I was. I just did not have a clue. For a minute, I didn't know. I'd forgotten which island I was on to begin with. And then I could not have pinpointed myself on a map because I'd got into that quite lazy mindset of just following someone else.
That's a good point.
And that was great as well. It was really relaxing. And I came back from the trip, like, really, like, rejuvenated.
Yeah.
But it was very holiday-like rather than I've explored a new bit of the world by myself. Yeah. And I think it depends what you're looking for.
Exactly that.
It's the thrill of discovery, isn't it? And the feeling of, again, saying that I missed out on some roads in Norway. I also stumbled on the road down to Lysebotn, which I'd seen in photos and didn't even realise that that was the one I was riding until after I'd ridden it, the one that goes down the side of a fjord. And I did that in absolute torrential rain. And the next day was much brighter when I rode it up, and it was fantastic. But I completely got what you mean. The feeling of basically sort of stumbling upon that, because I was looking at a map and I was like, that looks cool.
And it's harder work, isn't it, as well? It's harder work to do those things.
And it feels, there is a sense of, and, you know, it kind of, it bolsters your ego a little bit, especially when you see people going, well, that's an incredible road, and you're like, yeah, I found it. And that's, you know, I'm not like discovering it for the first time, but there's something cool about pathfinding and finding your own way. And
Definitely. I remember being in Morocco, and it was a long weekend in Morocco, and it was a really, really good tour. Rode some incredible roads, saw some fantastic places. But there was one area that I rode through, and I just remember thinking, this is absolutely amazing. It's like riding on the moon, the landscape. But I don't know where it was.
Yeah.
And I've looked on Google Maps to try and find it since.
And this was an organised tour, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, I'd love to tell everyone about it, but I have no idea where it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I could find out easily enough by asking the tour guide, but I guess it doesn't mean that much to me to find it. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. When you do it alone and you leave some element of your route planning to fate, almost, sounds a bit, but to the direction your wheel is pointing, like, you find some of the most amazing places that you didn't think to even Google or wherever. Like, Zion National Park in America is I'd imagine most people, have you heard of Zion National Park?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So most people would have heard of Zion National Park. When I was riding from Colorado to LA, I had no idea what I was riding through. I just knew I wanted to go from, I knew I wanted to see Utah, the Arches National Park. Then I wanted to stay in a place in Mexican Hat because my dad said they had the best steak there.
It's a good steak.
I don't know. I arrived too late. Didn't get the steak.
If you'd been on an organised tour, you would have got the steak. No,
And then I wanted to see Monument Valley. And then from Monument Valley, my next stop was Vegas. So that from Monument Valley to Vegas is a big, big day. Yeah. And I don't know. I just thought, right, I'll just blast over to Vegas. Won't really stop and see anything in the way. And then I saw a signpost for Zion National Park. And I was like, oh, that could be fun. I wonder what Zion National Park is. And then I went in and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, and it's probably, you know, I went to Yosemite on that trip as well. And I think Zion was more incredible than Yosemite.
Nice.
And just stumbling upon probably one of the most visited national parks in America, but stumbling upon that by myself, I thought, wow, look what I've found.
But then that ties in a little bit with, I think, our next topic, which is planning. And it's kind of like you could have got there with a bit of prior planning.
Yeah, yeah. Just before we get onto that, because we've spoken a lot about the pros of organised tours and we touched on the benefits of riding solo, but one of the things that is a pro and a con for me is, like a lot of adventure bikers in the UK, you know, I enjoy going to the Pyrenees and the Alps and the Picos de Europa, so sort of northern Spain and Italy, France and Switzerland. And when I've got a week off work, I will hoon it down there.
Yeah,
over a day and a half, 2 days through France, and it's both boring, unbearable, but brilliant, fun, and exciting at the same time. An organised tour, chances are you'll fly out somewhere.
Yeah,
pick up a bike, and then that same day be riding or staying in a nice
start
hotel.
Riding somewhere epic.
But what do you guys think? For me, getting to the Alps from my front door to the Alps feels like an achievement, even though I don't always enjoy it.
Yeah, I think the first time it did, but I've grown to it's just head down, isn't it? Head down, get the motorway over, get the auto routes and the autobahns over, and maybe have a dodgy schnitzel on the way.
nice.
But if it was up to me, I'd click my fingers and be in the Alps. And one of the best things I did for that actually is flying. I can't remember who it was. There was a company that shipped our bikes over from roundabout Stratford-upon-Avon to Geneva. Flew over to Geneva, picked up our own bikes, rode around the Alps, and then rode back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously that's a bit more costly than riding over, but, you know, if you've got the money, that's the way to do it, I think.
And I guess it comes down to time and money, doesn't it? If you've got the time and you've got the money to spend, why not do that?
Yeah.
I often don't have the time. Don't have the money to spend, so hoon it down there. But either way, you're going to be riding some awesome mountain passes for a few days. So, but anyway, sorry. So moving on, Ollie, you had a great segue there, and I ruined it. So we're talking about probably do-it-yourself solo travel now, or with mates. Do you plan a route before you go, or do you make it up as you go along? What's the best approach, Ollie? What was your approach?
Well,
in your travels,
like we touched upon earlier, it was completely wing it and just go. And I think that had the approach came from two reasons, which is, first of all, like I mentioned, I had the unlimited time. Basically, I was going away with no sort. I didn't have to have a plan because there was no need for me to turn back at a certain point. So I just winged it, and that meant that I had some really cool random experiences. It also meant that I missed out on some stuff, but I really enjoyed that because I think that, touching back on travelling and discovering, it's quite cool that I met so many different people who informed where I went. So they would go, oh, well, you're riding through this area. Have you heard of X, Y, and Z road? And I haven't done any research. So, yeah, I'll go there. Where do I have to go? Oh, yeah, go right out here, left, and then carry on for 100 kilometres. And you'll turn up in this stunning place, and I'll be like, all right, cool, punch that into the sat-nav. And go, and then sure enough, that local knowledge was right, and it was incredible.
And locals mug you, and take your bike, take your wallet.
Comes that naive traveller. Yeah. Yeah. Get him in the hot tub.
Nice. Bryn, so yourself, the trips you've done, do you, I think I know the answer to this, do you plan?
What do you think the answer is?
No, you no. Well, you're the man who went on an iron butt without your wallet.
That is very true, yeah. Yeah, that was a surprise finding when I got to try and pull my wallet out and there was nothing in the pocket. Yes, I do, James, actually. No, I think it's a weird one because most of my riding has been for stuff in the magazine. So a lot of it I have to plan out quite, not meticulously to the point of I need to be here at this hour and there for the rise of dawn. It's I know I need to see these specific spots to get either a photo or, mostly a photo for the magazine. Yeah. So I know I need to go to these specific spots. These are the highlights of the route that I need to see. How I get between those kind of doesn't really matter. So my planning is kind of a bit loose, but where I definitely don't plan is accommodation.
Yeah.
So I think my personal view is if you plan your accommodation really strictly, is you really limit your ride because you have to be somewhere at the end of the day.
Yeah.
My preferred way of doing it is you get to about 6 o'clock, it's getting dark, and you think, oh crap, where am I going to stay tonight? And then you get your phone out, you go on booking.com or another one of those, lastminute.com. Didn't they go bust? Someone went bust.
I don't think they did. No. might have to delete that.
Cut that.
And just pull up, see where I can stay. And you find some really interesting, unique places that you wouldn't usually stay. Because they're usually the ones that aren't fully booked.
See, I find that really interesting because that's literally my least favourite part of solo travel. Genuinely, really? I hate getting to the end of... And I always did it when I was away, always, without fail. Even though I knew that it stressed me out, I would get to 6 and the sun would... And I'd be hungry and the sun would start coming down. And I'd be like, right, now where am I staying? All right, let's find a campsite. And, you know, and I ended up staying in a car park in Portugal once in, like, my tent. I'm like, put it in between some bushes.
Tesco or Aldi.
It was like a camper van. So there was camper vans there, but it was no tents allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to the point where it was like 8 o'clock and I was like, I cannot find anywhere to stay. There was no campsites.
No kinky old couple waiting for me with a hot tub. Like, wow, where am I going to go?
My usual go-to. That really stresses me out. And I found myself riding through, you know, just random places to find campsites. And then I find it interesting that you like that because that actually is the one bit that I don't enjoy. And I think that when I would start off a day, I would tend to not plan further than a day, but I would kind of think, where am I going? Where do I want to go through? But also, is there a campsite in that general vicinity that I can just aim for?
Yeah. But I know.
And that was my planning.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And if that's the way you like to do it.
Yeah.
And you're wrong. No, more power to you. But you know, you've been with me when we've gone to, you know, the one that comes to mind is when we went up to Yorkshire once after work.
Oh man, and that was a long ride.
Yeah, but
after work
we stopped at a hotel we stopped at services, I think, and I was trying to find a hotel on my phone, or we pulled in a lay-by and I was trying to find a hotel on my phone.
Yeah,
and the nearest one was maybe an hour's ride away.
Yeah,
but that was great because I've talked about it before, but like these moments where there's no plan and things are feeling a bit crap, like riding in really cold weather. Like, you remember that?
Yeah. Have a bad time, you remember it.
No, because and then
which
when
is
you
why
get,
you did an iron butt in winter.
But then when you get to your hotel, bed feels all the more better.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I was just trying to think while you guys were talking. I wasn't listening. I was trying to think. I've never planned a motorcycle trip.
No?
No, never. They've all been like the first one I did was I wrote for ABR magazine before I work here actually. I ended up in Benidorm of all places. Yeah. But me and a good mate of mine were meant to be going to the Alps. As we crossed the ferry, there was this just horrendous storm engulfing that part of Europe, and it didn't look like it was going to let up for a couple of weeks, and we only had like 10 days. So we decided to go to the Pyrenees instead once we got off the ferry. So instead of turning left, we turned right, and we had planned a little bit. And then that all went out the window. And ever since then, I've never planned. But I think you're right. I hate looking for accommodation on the road. Because I last time I went touring with my wife was... we had a Honda Goldwing. Oh, I love that bike. And we went to the Picos and the Pyrenees. So we rode down through France, over to the Picos, back through the Pyrenees and up again. And the first couple of days it was fun looking for little places, but by the end of it, it'd get to like, by the end we were looking at about 2 or 3 o'clock. It was getting earlier and earlier every right. day just to find somewhere to stay. And I just got so sick of it. I really did. I remember once I was in Biarritz, stood under an awning in the absolute pelting rain, looking on booking.com for somewhere to stay. And then we went into a hotel and tried to book it, and they wanted to charge us double that was on the app. So we went outstairs and tried to find some Wi-Fi, and I just, it annoyed the hell out of me.
One of my favourite parts of riding is the not riding part.
the hanging out.
Just stopping and hanging out. Like, getting a coffee and choosing your accommodation.
It's
same with, like, you go on a guided tour and you get that email with your bikes.
Yeah.
For me, it's at the end of the day, it's the excitement of, ooh, where am I going to stay? Yeah. Or, where am I not going
to
stay?
Well, what are you guys, when it comes to planning a trip, so I've said I've never planned a motorcycle trip. You might have heard, I bicycled the length of America. Have I ever mentioned that?
You've never said that.
Yeah, the Pacific Coast. Yeah, pretty epic. For that trip, I actually quit my job. Disappeared off for 2 months with the same good friend of mine. People do talk, and spent a couple of months sleeping in a tent and cycling, and building up to that trip. I planned for about 6 months, and I had an itinerary of all the places we could stay every night for 2 months. I had a route, I had maps, and do you know what? That 6 months was almost as enjoyable as the trip itself.
I was going
to
say,
loved poring over, and I'd got on forums and were talking to people who've done it, and I started a blog and would like blog about the preparation, and that was such a wonderful experience, and I'm really glad I did it. And once we were on the road, it's a bit difficult with cycling because, as you know, you've cycle toured.
Yeah.
You can't just change your plan at the last minute because it could be 3 hours. Cycling is 30 miles or something like that.
Yeah.
The speed I cycle, anyway. but having that spine of a plan and a route to follow almost freed us up to do whatever we wanted, because we knew at the end of the day, we just needed to be there. And if we found an alternative, we could. But it just really helped kind of open up possibilities, knowing that we didn't have to spend ages messing around trying to find somewhere.
I was going to say, when I went to Scotland with Andy, he had a bit more of a plan than
Who's
I
Andy?
Did. A friend of mine who I went up
Your
to friend. Scotland with.
Yeah. Nice!
and he turned up at my house on his bike, and I was like, right, cool. So we were hitting the motorway and tabbing it up to Scotland then. And he was like, no, I've got a route mapped out and we're going to go. And I was like, oh, like, that's more organisation than I've ever put towards anything. And then actually that day was brilliant because he had, you know, looked and found a really cool route that went up through the Peak District, then to a campsite, and then up through the Yorkshire Dales, across the border. And it ended up being really good fun. And the tour kicked off straight away and we rode these brilliant roads. And I was kind of like, this is what planning feels. This is what good planning feels like. And I think that, and also, as you said, like, planning is quite exciting. You sort of start to hype it up a little bit. Whereas I think I'd kind of, because it's we work in bikes, I'd just seen it as, it's another bike trip coming up. And I'd kind of not really given it too much thought until it came to the Friday. And then we're riding. And it was a brilliant trip. But I think that the planning is definitely part of the trip for some people. And it's really, that's really cool. And it also means that you don't miss out on really good riding in between.
Yeah, it's interesting. You didn't plan your, you planned your cycle tour so meticulously.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I went on mine, I cycled around Europe.
Not you didn't do the length of America then. Little Europe.
This is sacrilege on a motorcycle.
I know.
Podcast.
Is this cycling 101?
Don't worry, guys. I'll never buy a cycle tour. I'm one of the real ones.
One of the real ones. We were young and carefree. And
skinny,
yeah, jeez. But we, you know, we knew roughly the direction we wanted to ride, and we just rode. And, camped by rivers, camped on beaches, camped in, I think we camped in a car park as well. It was nice. unorganised...
Shambles.
But I remember it vividly because it was just so enjoyable. And like getting to the first mountain pass on a push bike after not realizing that the road goes over a big ass mountain, and having never ridden a mountain pass on a fully loaded touring bike before.
It's tough, isn't it?
It was just really fun and enjoyable.
I remember the last thing on cycle touring, but when me and my mate went, and he was looking at my spreadsheet of all the stops and the route and that, and he was just like, it's the Pacific coast we're following. Just get to the ocean on our right. We're going south. Yeah. And he was like genuinely a believer in that and really kind of mocking me for planning so much. The first, I'd say, week and a half, we didn't see the ocean.
Really?
No, so if it was up to him, we would have been lost. Yeah. But anyway, you were talking about your friend Andy, which takes us in to the next topic in motorcycle touring, which is, do you go solo or do you go with friends? What's the best approach? Bryn, what would you prefer to do? Head off on your own or...
Prefer to do?
Do it with your mates.
Prefer to do versus what reality allows me to do.
And what are the pros and cons of either?
Is I don't really have any friends.
No? Got me, man. It's all right. It's all good.
No. There's most of my riding is solo. Is by myself because none of my immediate friends from outside of you guys rides, so I do it by myself or I go with my dad or whatever, and so a lot of my stuff has been done alone and I quite like that because
you don't have to talk to us.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're convincing yourself.
like you said, you march to beat your own drum, you do whatever you want. But one of the best things about riding solo, I think, is the people you meet. We've touched on it a lot, but I think when you're with friends, you are definitely less open to meeting new people. You're less approachable as a person as well.
I noticed that really strongly as a couple. So riding with a mate, I'd always meet people.
When we ride Pillion.
Yeah, when we're a couple. But when I ride my wife, we just get talking to so less people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a big thing about it because, you know, bikers are weirdly seen as intimidating anyway by a lot of people,
you know.
And when there's two of you, you become a gang. Yeah. And you just talk to less people, you become a bit more reclusive. And I just remember again riding from Colorado, Denver to LA by myself, and just the people who every time I stopped, someone would come and talk to me.
Yeah.
Whether it was a petrol forecourt and someone would come over and talk to me about the bike or ask me where I'm going, what am I doing. And the best one was when I was in Fresno. And this was, again, accommodation planning. It got to probably 6, 7 p.m. And I knew I had to get to L.A. for a flight in the morning. So I got to Fresno and I was thinking, where shall I stay? And I saw a Chinese buffet, so I pulled over at the Chinese buffet. Yeah.
Good choice.
There's no better way to plan your accommodation than with some fried rice and spare ribs. And so I got in there. I was probably on my fourth plate or so, and I stood by the spare ribs, and I asked the waitress for a plate. And this guy heard me talking, and he asked, "Oh, are you English?" And I said, "Yeah, I am, yeah. Why?" And he said, and basically it turned out he was English. He was working in Fresno at the zoo as an elephant trainer.
That's a cool
And
job.
I told him that is the best pickup line I've ever heard. And he said, "Well, come and sit with me and my friend." And so I went and sat with him and his mate, and we got chatting. And then they eventually said,
"We have a hot tub."
not far off. They eventually said, "Oh, where are you staying tonight?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. Actually, I need to be in LA in the morning, but you know, I'm pretty free." And he said, "Oh, come back and stay at ours, have a few beers and watch the new episode of Game of Thrones," because Game of Thrones was good back then and the new series had come out. And I was like, "Oh, brilliant, yeah, I don't have to pay for accommodation, I can go back to these guys' house." They said that I could leave the bike behind the house, they got a garden with a fence.
There'd be no trace of you at all.
Well, this is it. So I started riding, they said, "Follow us." So I got in the back, I got on the bike, started following them, and apparently Fresno's not got a great reputation for much at all, other than being, I could hear a lot of dangerous things happen. I might be wrong, but we stopped at this off license. He got out, got some beer, and I was looking around. I was like, "This looks a bit dodgy. Yeah. Like this is a bit of a sketchy neighborhood." He got back in the car, so I followed them again. Every turn, it got dodgier and dodgier, and then I started getting that twinge of like, nobody knows where I am. Yeah. Nobody knows that I'm going back to two guys' house who could quite easily...
Nick the bike and...
More... What are they going to do?
Take away your innocence, maybe. Yeah.
And so I remember I got there and I said... They took me into the house and showed me around and they said, "Oh, you can have a shower if you want," and stuff like that. And I was thinking, "Oh, I've just got to get something off the bike." So I went outside and I texted my girlfriend saying, I'm at this address in Fresno. If you don't hear from me in the morning, call the police.
She didn't worry at all.
No, I was like, I'm sure
that's the text you want. They're a 7-hour flight.
I was like, I'm sure it's fine, but you know, if this is where I am,
I bet she was happy about that. Did it turn out okay?
No.
No.
Yeah, no, it did. Turns out these guys were brilliant. They got me set up on the sofa bed. Got me, plied me with beer. I don't know what happened after that. No, we got loads of beer, watched Game of Thrones, and just chatted about things. He was a great guy. In the morning, he got up at 5 a.m., made me a coffee, and sent me off. It was great.
5 a.m. That's a bit rude.
Yeah. Well, no,
off you go.
And these people, like, I wouldn't have met if I was with someone else.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing as well. When you go away on your own, you are vulnerable and you feel vulnerable. Yeah. But I think that people, actually, by and large, are nice. Decent, people are nice, people are decent, and people respond to vulnerability, by and large, with like massive shows of affection and like hospitality. We're never going to let that go. Like, but you get so much hospitality, and the truth is that, like, some people do say, "Well, I would never go that far away from home on my own on a bike. I'd just be so nervous about it. I'd never wild camp in the middle of nowhere on my own." And I completely get that. But actually, I've never ever had a bad experience. And with all the people that we get to interview through the magazine, when you speak to them about the trips that they've done in you know around the world. And 99.9999% of the time, they are just met with so much hospitality and friendship. And I think being on your own and being vulnerable actually really opens you up to that. At the same time, you do have that lonely side, and there is also the vulnerable side, and it's never nice to feel particularly vulnerable. So it's weighing up those things. I mean, for my part, I think anything less than a week, I quite like to be in a small group of mates. Like, I really enjoy travelling with a mate because...
Do you think it's quite liberating travelling alone, though? You know, we sort of touched earlier about that sense of achievement.
Yeah.
That, okay, these are roads or trails that people have done millions of times before, but it's the first time you've done it. You're out of your comfort zone. And when you're out of your comfort zone and you've got no one else to rely on, once you've achieved that, it really does, for me, it does stay with me. And I think that I feel I've accomplished something small in this world, and it helps you grow a little bit as a person.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel pretty good having done my iron butt.
Did you do an iron butt?
I did do it.
Did really? You haven't told me about it.
Well, no, I don't know whether I can call it an iron butt, because it's not, I haven't been licensed by the Iron Butt Association. They're not licensed, verified by them to do it. But I did 1,000 miles in 25 hours. I don't know if I've told you. But I did it by myself, and it was just, you know, I feel more accomplished having done that by myself than, because I like to think that neither of you two could have done it.
Too soft. I would have done it in summer. Yeah. On the flip side, though, I've done quite a lot of motorcycle travel with one mate in particular.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I love it. It brings us closer together, I think. We've become better mates over the last 10, 15 years because we travel together so much. Mm. And it's weird because there will be times when we annoy each other, but we kind of know that. And we kind of, you become, but sharing those experiences with someone that you're really good mates with is just, I don't know, it's really good fun. And also when it's someone that you can get up to a bit of mischief with as well, you know, and you know, we sometimes have a drink and we sometimes go and do things and we've got into a bit of trouble and whatnot. But I think it's
part of the trip, isn't it?
It's just sort of sharing travel with mates is a really good thing. And these days I do it more with my wife. I travel with my wife more. And even though we don't meet as many people as I used to, like, sharing those experiences with my wife brings us closer together. And you know, it's great when we're talking about where we're going to go next and what we're going to do. I'm just so incredibly lucky that I have a wife that likes travelling by motorcycle. Because if I didn't, she'd be on a lone a lot.
So do you reckon you're definitely with mates rather than solo?
If I was given the choice, if I was doing a trip,
ooh, chips.
I was doing a trip, and a friend of mine said, "Oh mate, I'd love to come along." I would never say no.
Yeah,
I'd never say no. I want to go solo. I would always go with a friend.
But, fair enough.
Yeah. I'm gonna stick with below a week. I'd search for a mate to go with above a week on my own.
I think I'm easy. Whatever.
Whoever,
yeah, whoever. If
that's, I was sitting on the fence.
Pretty much, like I don't feel strongly enough about going solo or with mates to have a valid sort of opinion on that one. I don't think.
No.
Fair enough. Just disregard everything I just said.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Okay, so that takes us swiftly on to our final point when it comes to motorcycle touring is, do you go with a credit card and very little else, or do you pack the kitchen sink? Full-on set of luggage, top box, side cases, tank bag, maybe some extra fuel bottles, tent strapped to the back. What do you reckon? What would be your ideal approach to motorcycle touring?
Well, what's yours, James?
What's mine?
Yeah.
I asked the questions. Do you know what? There's nothing I love more than having a big set of aluminium panniers on my bike. I just absolutely love it. Even if I'm going to the shop. I'm one of those guys. I'll go to Starbucks with my aluminium panniers. Because I just feel so cool.
Just looks good, doesn't it?
It makes me remember the great times I've had touring. Now, when I tour, I tend to spend 95%+ on the road.
Yeah.
I love going to the Alps, the Pyrenees. You know, when I was in Thailand, it was all on the road. This is just the type of riding I do. If there's some trails and stuff that I can encounter along the way, I'll go and have a dabble and have some fun. But I'm predominantly a road tourer, so I'm metal luggage. And I love just opening up the lids on metal luggage that opens on the top and just chucking stuff in.
Yeah.
It really is. I'm a big believer in the bags within bags approach. So I'll have my clothes, I'll have my electronics and stuff like that, but those bags are thrown in.
Yeah. Would you take toolkit, extra fuel, all that stuff? Or would you on a Haynes manual, or would you rely on?
Almost. Yeah. So a good example is when my wife Karina and I went to a couple of weeks, was it 10, 11 days? I don't know. Down to Spain on the bikes, Picos, Pyrenees, France, on a Honda Goldwing. We took credit card, we took a tent.
Yeah.
I took a puncture repair kit and a few tools. We took very few clothes for me and lots of clothes for her. No, actually, she's pretty good.
Wear those as well?
Yeah, that's it. I've run out of pants, I borrow her knickers. We did actually have to have the conversation once before our honeymoon, because we went on a motorcycle tour on our honeymoon. And I was like, my love, you can... Really, we've only got room for two dresses. And this was like 3 weeks. And she was like, James, it's my honeymoon. I'm not taking two dresses. But I like taking a lot. I've got a big adventure bike. I've got all the power in the world.
Yeah.
And I like being able to say, yeah, I'm going to wild camp over there. But I also like having a credit card and saying, yeah, I'm going to go and stay in that hotel because it's got a pool and I'm really damn hot and I want to swim and have a cocktail. You know, so, but given the choice, I would always take luggage and always take gear.
Yeah.
So I don't need to hear from you guys. That's the right answer.
No, I don't think there's much to argue about there, really. I think you...
Because I know your dad, Alan, who's the founder and owner of Adventure Bike Rider, he's very much on the credit card approach, isn't he?
Yeah, there's always going to be someone who can fix your problems given enough of a... What do you call it? Cross their palm with enough silver.
That's it. And Alan's like ridden like all a lot of places in the world, isn't he? Probably more than the three of us combined tenfold.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's kind of, and I always think it's interesting that after all the years and all the places around the globe he's ridden, he's decided that that's his approach.
Yeah. And it's definitely, you know, that's more my thinking as well now. He's definitely influenced me on that.
Yeah, because I was going to say, your like the booking.com approach is go and find a hotel.
Yeah, I'd rather book a hotel at the end of the day than find somewhere to camp, even if that hotel is 2 hours away.
Yeah.
It's just very adventure bike rider, right? My mechanical knowledge is non-existent. So if I carried tools on my bike, I would be the biggest tool of the lot. There's just no point. And there's always going to be someone somewhere nearby-ish who knows how to fix a bike or can tow you to somewhere where you can get your bike fixed. And then that just becomes part of the trip.
Yeah. It's true.
So I would be more inclined to leave the stuff like that at home and take a credit card.
Yeah. It is. And I'm self-sufficient. I like... 10, I want 10, I want pasta sauce, I want pasta, I want everything in the panniers so that if I am riding along and I go, oh, that's a lovely little spot there, I will pull there and I will just spend the night there. No, I won't have to go to a shop, I'll have beer in the panniers as well and everything.
That is the best thing.
That's the one thing you always need to carry. Forget tyre puncture repair kits.
Genuinely, one of the best things about one of the guided tours I went on was just... not long before the end of the day, the guide would always find an off license, go and get a six pack of beer. It was still cold, and then when we finished, get the beer out of the pannier and just hand everyone a beer, and it was just the perfect way to finish.
Yeah, that does sound pretty good.
It's something I do at the end of every day of bike touring. Yeah. Is I have a cold beer, and it's become a ritual now.
Yeah,
and it's just to have to. And if I don't do it, I don't have the shakes. I don't desperately need the alcohol, but I feel as if like I need to celebrate the day's ride.
Yeah, it is.
That's what we do.
You know, it's not about getting drunk. It's just a beer is so refreshing, isn't it? It just hops off. Sorry, I massively interrupted.
No, that's all right. this podcast seems to be sponsored by beer. It's just so refreshing. But yeah, like that's my approach. It's self-sufficient. I like camping. I think I don't really mind. I know that your dad always says, well, I've done the camping, I've done that stuff, and now I value a nice bed and a hot shower. I'm still sort of at that point where I don't mind having a crap night's sleep and swimming in a cold river in the morning. Like that's I
think it's an age thing. Stereotyping hugely here, but when I was younger, I used to love camping.
Yeah.
And I still quite like it. I might look 21, but I'm actually 40 now. and I find myself liking it less. And I'll still do it and enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it as much as I used to. When I'm touring, I find myself staying in hotels. I actually like a hostel, a private room in a hostel, more than camping now. Do you think sort of the older you get, the more you're like, yeah, I've done it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not exactly... I'm not exactly ancient. I'm 30, but I feel like I've done enough of that in my earlier years to appreciate camping. And I'll camp every now and then if I have to.
Did you sleep in a snow hole or something on a mountainside once?
No, Mont Blanc. I did do the Eiger as well, though, just saying.
Have you climbed Mont Blanc and the Eiger? And you did an Eiger?
And I did an Eiger. Pretty impressive guy, you know? No, but yeah, we slept on a... This goes to planning again. We didn't really plan where we were going to stay on Mont Blanc. And the second hut, which is maybe 3,800-ish metres up, was full because there was a backlog of climbers from a storm that was on the mountain. So we got there, but luckily we had some bivy bags in our rucksack, and we ended up having to dig out a snow hole. Probably like that deep. Nah, a bit deep, like that deep, and wide enough for three people to fit in there. And it took us a good few hours because all we had was ice axes to do it. And the whole purpose of snow hole is to kind of insulate you a little bit, keep the wind off you if it starts being windy. And after we dug the snow hole, I just remember looking up and this Norwegian fella poked his head over and said, "You guys are going to die tonight. Do you want some brandy?" And we're like, "Yes, please." And that was amazing.
That's enough to make you value a hotel room for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed that. But given on a bike...
Yeah.
Where I can ride to a hotel, I'd go to a hotel.
Yeah.
And I know there's a romance about kind of camping low-key. A guy you've ridden with in America, John Hacks,
who
runs
106 West Adventures.
Yeah. Great guy, writes some travel features in ABR. And in his travel features, he just kind of like rolls out the roll mat like a cowboy, sleeps under the stars, has a little bourbon or a whiskey, and just looks like an absolute hero.
Yeah.
In reality, I always don't sleep and wake up feeling like absolute crap.
to be honest, John, like, the way he talks about those travels as well, it sounds incredible from the way he talks about it and the way he does it. And he genuinely does, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Nevada and Utah and Colorado, just roll out his mat and sleep under the stars.
With his cowboy boots on and nothing else. Yeah.
That sounds incredible. But I would wake up thinking, I'm getting bitten to hell by bugs and stuff.
I always think about, especially when motorcycle camping, I always think back to a couple of nights I spent in Chamonix. Well, there's a campsite now, which unfortunately you can't camp at anymore, which is my favourite stopping off point for the Alps. And I met this wonderful Dutch couple, Koos and Monique, who I still keep in contact with. And they were camping there as well. And me and my mate, Pierre, my only friend, were there. And we were sat on our kind of panniers, eating a pot noodle, kind of, we bought a couple of beers and that was it. Bloody uncomfortable. And these guys just had this wonderful setup. They only had like a KTM 1190 Adventure, I think, and a BMW 800GS. And they had this wonderful setup with a tent, an awning. They had chairs. They had like cooking utensils. It was just the most brilliant setup you could have for camping. And they were there for two or three days and they were so comfortable. But then when they packed it all up, it all just went back into the same amount of luggage that me and Pierre had. And somehow our luggage was full of our rubbish and theirs was full of all this stuff that made life really enjoyable. So I'm a big believer, and the purists out there might laugh at me or talk, look down on me. But if you are camping, don't scrimp on some luxuries as you do it.
I got the lightest one-man hiking tent. It was such a stupid idea. Because in Norway, when it's just, there's nothing going on but rain. So you pitch up your tent and you kind of scurry underneath it, and that's it for the entire evening. I couldn't even sit up. So I was just lying there, like,
I mean, luckily, dreaming of the hot tub.
The service is great there. So like, I'd maybe read a book, or like on my, some nights I'll just watch a bit of Netflix. But I mean, there really wasn't anything to do but lie there. Wonder why I got myself into this mess.
That does not sound miserable in the place.
But you've got your shoes next to you or your wet gear because you can't leave it out. I've noticed that with small tents. You end up sleeping with a load of stuff that you don't want to leave outside.
Always go up a size.
Yeah.
If it's one man, get a two man. If it's two man, get a three man.
But then at the same time, I think that there is, like, going back to, there's a little bit of a bravado and stuff in that hardship. And there's quite a adventure, going back to that word that I kind of said there's no definition of, but it makes you feel adventurous and it makes you feel like you're doing something quite tough, and that is quite cool. But I can also see how if you do that a number of times, or maybe no one would ever want to do that because they're sat at home thinking, that sounds miserable, I don't see how that's adventurous at all. Give me a nice, but give me a great day's riding on the best passes, a cold beer, a nice meal, a warm bed and a hot shower.
Bringing it back to the subject. Just guided tour or going alone.
Guided tour or going alone. Yeah, that's it. All right. And that kind of probably actually wraps up our discussion, our ramble. But, you know, we do love bike touring. But, you know, to wrap up that subject matter, guided tour or going alone?
Going alone.
Yourself?
Oh, it is a tough question. I think, it's a cop out.
It depends. No, you have to pick one.
No, because it depends on what I want. If I've got a week and I want to go and ride somewhere like Thailand, I'm going to have to do a guided tour.
But if it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. So,
Can you get to Thailand with 7 days of iron butts?
Well, if one man can do it, it's Bryn Davis.
In winter. I'll climb the mountains on the way as well. Given the choice, I would probably say being alone. Very tough choice.
Nice.
Very
nice.
Tough choice, but well, there you go.
I've only done two guided tours, had absolutely sensational times, highly recommend it. But if it's my choice, I'd go alone, but with a friend or my wife.
Yeah. I'm thinking of changing my answer now.
Yeah.
To maybe a guided tour.
Well, the thing is, though, your tours with John Hacks in America, they're kind of... They're guided tours, but they are like pretty adventurous, aren't they? You are out in the middle of nowhere.
That's kind of an interesting point that actually we sort of miss, which is if you're going it alone in places that like America or Thailand, it's even harder. Like going it alone in Europe is doable because you can jump on the channel, the ferry or the channel tunnel. But if you're going it alone in America, you go out there, you find hire, and then you're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Guided tours. Purely for...
And you've ridden in more adventurous... I keep using that word. You've ridden further afield than I have, and I've always gone out alone, and so have you, with your guided tours.
I'm going to say, based on reality and my actual life circumstances, guided tour is the one. Because of the convenience and... the convenience of doing it.
Nice. Yeah. There we go. Well, that wraps up that discussion. Thank you very much. Hopefully it's all clear to you now. Because it is me. And have you done an iron butt? Is it?
I've done 1,000 miles in 24 hours.
All right. So, you know, I think it was great. We all love touring and it's great to talk about it. And hopefully, fingers crossed, get to go and do some more of it this year.
And don't forget to let us know in the comments, obviously, which side of each debate you fall on, because we'd love to hear from you.
Honestly, I just want to say, honestly, it doesn't really matter.
No.
What you bought.
Do you know what? That is probably the best way to round it up.
Yeah.
It really does not matter as long as you're out there riding a bike somewhere awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever you like to do is the best one.
Yeah.
But anyway, I picked up my piece of paper, so it signals that we're going to do something different now.
Let's do it.
Which is just read out a few of the listener comments that we've had over the past, a couple of weeks and beyond. And please do leave your comments on YouTube and let us know what you think about it, as Ollie said. And we will pick out our favourite comments and read them.
And you win something special.
And you win something special as well.
I can't say exactly what yet, but something special.
That's it, that's it. So I'll kick off with the first comment. And this was left at the on our last podcast, wasn't it?
New bikes for
2022. Yeah. So looking at the new bikes that are being launched this year. And it's from Kieran Brown. It says, "Hi guys, please could you do an episode on adventure bikes for beginners? Or even just covering all things adventure bike related for complete beginners. I'm hoping to go for my licenses in a couple of months, so I'm sure myself and many others would really love to hear your advice. And as an aside, would a Triumph Tiger 800 be a good start for a beginner? Well, after listening to this podcast, he knows everything he needs to know about motorcycle touring."
Yeah.
So that's fine. So that's covered. You're welcome, Kieran. Do you think, sometimes we forget, don't we, that when you start out, you do know nothing. We don't know too much now, to be honest with you, but we know a little bit more. Do you think it's stuff that we do, you know, you do take for granted once you've been abroad a couple of times?
Yeah, definitely. I remember the first time I was riding abroad by myself, and just the feeling of riding on the wrong side of the road and the slip roads off the motorway being a lot shorter. It just really terrifying. Kind of got in my head. It was dark, it was the roundabouts went the wrong way. I was thinking, what?
That's went the wrong way.
And I was thinking, there is always that one moment where you look, and then someone flashes past you from the other side, and you're like,
I was thinking, what have I done? Take me home, take me home. Yeah. And definitely, it's easy to overlook that beginner aspect of things. And I think Kieran has a good point, and we've probably got a lot of knowledge that we could share to beginners.
So a good adventure bike for a beginner, I think it's quite a difficult question to answer, but I definitely think that somewhere around the Triumph Tiger 800 and that sort of mid-weight road touring bike is a good... I mean, I started off with... My first adventure bike was the F650 GS Twin, and that's the one that I did my trip on, and that was brilliant because it was manageable. It had a ton of pulling power, so I could load it up with panniers and just go off. It was
how you pulled the Norwegian middle-age.
Yeah, they just loved the...
wheeling down the road on the 650.
I would say the 800, the Tiger 800 is a goodish beginner's bike. The 850 Sport
it's cracking
bike. Probably there now, but my beginner's bike of choice was the V-Strom 650.
Yep, good bike.
I thought that was just perfect. It didn't have too much power that you would do an overtake and start fearing for your own life. But it feels like a bigger bike while still also being manageable and small. I thought the V-Strom 650 was great. And you started on a CB500X, didn't you?
Yeah. I think people ask sort of quite often, what's a good beginner bike? And I think a lot of it is often down to the individual as well, because there will be people that pass their test, jump on an R1250 GS and are fine. I know Alan has got some friends that have done that.
Yes.
It's not something I would recommend doing, and it's not something I would have done. But I've also got a friend who's currently learning to ride, and she's pretty nervous about moving up in bikes. She's looking at small bikes, sort of, you know, 300-400, something like that, even 500. My message to her is, don't let the fear kind of make you choose a bike that you're probably going to keep for a year or two and outgrow really quickly. But also, you don't want to get a bike that's too big, drop it, crash, and really be put off. Yep. So it's really difficult. It's got to be down to the individual a bit. But what I would say is, if you're thinking about the Tiger 800, just sit on it. Try and test ride it, because, you know, when you're a new rider, getting your feet on the floor is so important.
Oh, yeah.
Please don't get a bike that you can't get both feet flat on the floor, because it's so easy to drop them when you're a bit nervous and so forth. If you're tall enough and you've got the confidence, a Tiger 800 would be a job. But bear in mind, it is relatively top heavy.
You can get it lowered.
The low version,
Which does make it a lot more manageable. One of my guy I used to know got it lowered because he was quite short, and lowering it would have made it far more suitable.
Personally, I'd probably go for something a bit smaller, and that's what I'd recommend.
I think anyone would benefit from having 6 months to a year on a small bike.
And also, your first bike, you know, you're kind of in that exciting stage where you just want to ride different bikes, and I think that whatever bike you choose for your first bike, you're going to want to try something else at some point. So I would say maybe a tad smaller.
And the best way for Kieran to learn about adventure biking.
Yes.
And adventure bikes.
Actually, it's a really good shout.
Is to subscribe to Adventure Bike Rider magazine.
And also, like, genuinely come along to the Adventure Bike Rider Festival this year. No, we are, you know, obviously it's our festival and we do want people to come along and buy tickets. But actually, if you are new to riding, but you've got your test, it's a really good place to come along and not only try out some bikes and sit on some bikes, and but also meet a lot of people and chat to a lot of people who are either in a similar position or have got more experience and just learn about this wonderful world and community that we're part of.
There's masterclass sessions to learn learn techniques, skills, other things. There's off-road instruction where, you know, everyone will benefit from learning to ride off-road because it improves your confidence on the bike, but also your slow control and stuff.
And there's all the major manufacturers are there with a fleet of bikes for test riding, but also for you just to throw your leg over and see if you can reach the ground on. I mean, it's our own festival.
There's also live music. There's a pint for £3, as well as lots of other drinks and lots of fun happening.
So we'll see you there, Kieran.
We'll be we'll see you there. But also we'll see you there because what we want to do is we want to give you a free subscription, free digital subscription to Adventure Bike Rider.
Oh, you've ruined the suspense. We've got more comments to read out. You've said he's a winner.
But it kind of made sense talking about him.
Go on, Ben.
Ben? Who's Ben?
It's all ruined.
Sorry,
it's
Kieran.
Falling apart.
Kieran, you've won a digital subscription to Adventure Bike Rider magazine, which includes access to every single issue of Adventure Bike Rider magazine ever published, so you can become an adventure bike rider.
Why has Kieran won that?
I don't know.
Because he's got our favourite comment.
I thought it was just a nice thing to do.
So for the people that didn't win the subscription, would you like to read Derek's comment out?
Yeah, I'd love to read Derek's comment. So, Derek, you didn't win. but you did say...
That's the point in listening.
You say, great to see the Suzuki and Honda Tourers on the up and up. Touring bikes offer some great advantages, and I predict these bikes will sell well. Now, that review was on, I believe, your review of the
Suzuki GT.
Or something.
No, it was actually the garage, so the podcast about the new bikes for 2022, which is got the Honda NT1100, which is the new basically touring bike that's based on the chassis of the Africa Twin, but is an adventure bike, and then Suzuki's GSX S1000 GT, which is a traditional sports tourer, according to Suzuki, and I rode it at the press launch, and it's bloody brilliant.
So yeah, I think you're right, Derek. It's fantastic to see all sorts of bikes coming out and coming up on the up and up.
Yeah. Next comment is my favourite. Stuart Robertson said, who hung that wallpaper? It's shocking. Really hard to concentrate on the presenters with that in the background. I'm glad that I'm reading that out because I didn't.
Because it was Ollie. It was Ollie.
Also,
he chose it.
What wallpaper? This fantastic brick wall. That's
exactly.
We, you know, chiseled away the paint and really exposed the brick. No, that was not me. I'm not taking the blame for that one.
You paid a lot of money for that. Thousands and thousands of pounds.
Well, Stuart, the people who hung that paper was actually James and I. And we thought we did a good job.
Sure, I love the fact we stood here hanging it. And we spent ages like lining it up and like, yeah, mate, that's good, that's good. And then we got the one on the end a little bit wrong. But, you know, the alternative was just to have a blank white wall, which looked really Spartan. So I'm sorry that...
Well, we're glad it affected you so much that you needed to comment.
I'm sorry it's not up to scratch.
I mean, it's a good plug for the audio version of this podcast.
Don't watch.
If the wall is that distracting, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Final. We really need three bits of paper. I printed out one of these each.
Mine's in my pocket.
Final comment from some fella called the Mistum Flyer. Never heard of him. Don't know who he is. Ooh, an underlight. I like the sound of that. Looking forward to trying one of these big puppies myself sometime.
What was that? The K1600.
That was after I went to visit the Mistum Flyer. No, that was from a comment on a video I did about BMW's new K1600. It's a big touring bike that's been updated for 2022. One of the features on one of the four models is an underlight, which is, I think they call a parking light, but a parking light is already been around for a while, isn't it? So basically it is what it is, an underlight, which looks really cool. Massive overkill, completely over the top. And I was trying to think, like, I did a video walk around of it at the launch, and I was trying to think, why would you possibly need one of these? And actually, as I said in that video, if you're on a big touring bike, you know, how many times have you been on a bike, you've been on uneven ground and you've had to catch it and pull it back up, especially tall adventure bikes. Big tourers are hard to catch once they go over. And so having an underlight when it's dark to see where you're putting your side stand, if it's rough or uneven ground, something
makes
like
sense,
that,
hey?
It does make sense. And it looks like, I don't know, it looks like the Fast and the Furious or the K1600.
So Andy Missen of Flyer, he's got a Goldwing, hasn't he?
He has got a Goldwing. And, I'm very jealous of his Goldwing.
Yeah. I asked him if it was tempting away from his Goldwing, and he said no.
It's once you've ridden a Goldwing, it's hard to do anything else.
Yeah.
No, they are cracking bikes. But Mr. Missing and Fly, thank you very much for leaving that comment. Perhaps you can add an aftermarket underlight to your Goldwing.
You never know.
Perhaps it can flash and be like a Christmas tree or something like that. There we go. Well, I think that wraps up this episode of the ABR Garage. It's only half an hour over schedule, which I think is great. That's not too bad for us. And if I could say thanks for watching, but please, please do like the video and subscribe if you enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, you could do that as well, because you've sat all the way through it now. Because it really does help us continue making content for YouTube. And if you're listening to the audio version, particularly if you're listening to Apple Podcasts, it's not called iTunes anymore, Apple Podcasts, please do leave a rating, a positive review. Again, it helps us spread word about the pod and just helps us can carry on making content. So
and remember, if you leave a comment, you might win something.
What would you win? Is it going to be different if this is the first time we've
prize.
Given anything away? A mystery prize.
Mystery prize.
Listen to the end and you might win a mystery prize.
Yeah.
There we go. Guys, really appreciate you joining us this afternoon in the garage, stroke, office, stroke, badly wallpapered room.
terrible.
I've enjoyed it. I can't wait to get riding again with you guys. Yeah. It's one of the parts of the job I love the most is getting out on the road and riding bikes together and eating kebabs.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Best part.
But yeah. And thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you next time. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.